Hey folks, it's Jeremy, the host of Blammo. Thanks so much for listening. This is a preview of one of our exclusive shows on Patreon. These are member-supported shows, meaning they only happen because of our incredible members and community. So check out a preview of the episode, and if you like it, consider joining us on Patreon at patreon.com/Blammo, where we have tons of exclusive Blammo episodes, shows, our amazing Slack group, and we're adding new things for members all the time. If not, no worries, we still love you, and we literally have hundreds of episodes of Blammo all free for you to dive into. Thanks so much.
Welcome to another episode of the Die Workwear Podcast. My name is Derek Guy, and my co-host is Peter Zotello. So this is a special episode. Nina Pellington is the head cutter Edward Sexton, and she's carrying forward one of the greatest tailoring legacies of our generation. Edward Sexton was the technical mind behind Nutters of Salvero. In the 1960s and 70s, he and Tommy Nutter revitalized the row with their glamorous suits and welcoming shop front. They dressed rock and roll figures such as Mick Jagger, Elton John, and most members of the Beatles. The cut was unapologetic and romantic. They made full body coats with square shoulders, nipped waists, and lapels so wide they almost grazed the person's shoulder joints. Sexton liked to call his cut long and leafy. If you want to read more about his work, you can check out Lance Richardson's book, House of Nutter. Sadly, Edward passed away last summer, and Nina, who previously worked under him, has taken his place as the firm's head cutter. She has almost 20 years of experience as a cutter on the row, having worked at Deej & Skinner and Gieves & Hawks, which gives her a solid foundation for carrying forward Edward's strong angler cut. We talked to her about what it was like to work with Edward, how to make bespoke suits for women, and a controversial tailoring topic called straightening and crookening. If you're interested in her work, know that she's returning to the U.S. next month for trunk shows, along with Bud Shirt Makers, Gazion & Gerling, and E.B. Merowitz. The group is called the London Collective, and you can find their tour schedule at collective.london. Let's dive in.
Hello, everyone. We're here with Nina Pellington from Edward Sexton, the head cutter, who's here after measuring me. And I put it in order, and I can't wait to see it. It's going to be a brown velvet. You are the one that pushed me in that direction, which I'm happy to say you did, because I was kind of on that wavelength anyway.
Well, I don't think I pushed you. You gave me two options.
I did.
And one was pretty basic. It would have been a great suit, but I don't think it's what you wanted either.
But the other option was velvet, but just black velvet.
Yeah, but actually the other option was a flannel suit.
Pretty boring.
Which I think we could go so much more fun with this.
So brown velvet, which I never thought of before, but I really liked. What was the impetus behind brown velvet?
Well, we were talking about how to make a velvet jacket that's a little bit more kind of casual in a sense. Well, much less formal for a start.
Right.
And for me, that brown velvet just has kind of connotations of a battered up 1970s vintage jacket that you found somewhere years ago. And it's that piece that you always bring out because you know that it goes with everything and you know you can go for a drink with it and throw it on the floor afterwards or go for dinner somewhere, and depends how you style it. And brown's like super versatile. So that was my thinking, really.
You said the term daytime velvet.
Oh, what yeah, is, the daytime velvet.
I think of velvet as a nighttime fabric. So what is the idea of a daytime velvet?
Well, again, it goes back to that kind of jacket that you've always loved and have worn to death. And I think that a velvet jacket styled correctly and it doesn't look like a, you know, smart smoking jacket, I think that you can wear it with anything. And I think you should be able to wear that in the daytime. The idea came from an old customer of mine at Gieves, actually, who said he wanted a velvet suit he could wear every day. And that was like really chimed with me because it just made me think of those clothes I had as a teenager that I used to wear all the time and didn't care whether it was going to be daytime or evening, because you don't when you're 17. And why should we think any different in our 40s, right?
Can black be daytime velvet?
Yeah, I guess so. I think it's probably easier for women to wear that. I don't know why that comes to mind, but I think there's quite a lot of option for women to wear kind of black velvet in the day. I think it just depends on what you're wearing it with. But yeah, for sure, why not?
Are there certain details of the jacket that make it more appropriate for daytime?
Yeah, I think so. So we spoke with Peter about doing a 2SB notch, but having it slightly fatter because it's obviously it's an Edward Sexton, so we don't want it, you know, we want a nice fat lapel. But I think that just marks it from being a classic evening wear piece. And then putting kind of straight flat pockets and an out ticket, I think that just marks it a little bit more to a little bit more sports jacket territory, but it just happens to be in velvet. And I think the brown, again, just takes it away from those jewel tones that are so ubiquitously evening wear, you know?
What about the casual details, like not only the fact that it's brown, which immediately makes it more casual, but also ticket pocket and out pocket. These are the things in Britain, which is very much aligned with more of a casual way of dressing, despite the fact that it's velvet. Now, is this something that is typically something that you would see in London, or from your perspective, from your experience, because you've lived in London for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. You've worked in this industry for
16, I think it is. Yeah, something like that.
A good bit.
Yeah.
Would you say that suits, sport coats, two-piece suits, three-piece suits, the way that they have traditionally been worn, are still being worn that way in London, or is there a change?
I think we have to answer this question in two ways, because I spend my life on Savile Row, which is a very different answer.
Very different world.
Yeah, for sure. So I think if you're on Savile Row and you look around and you expect to take a straw poll from that, then you're going to have the wrong idea. But from kind of customers that come in the door, for sure, everything's changed. But I think usually the easy answer is to say post-pandemic. And how people's working practices have changed and working from home and all of that stuff. I don't think that's the marker, actually. I think it comes before that. We've seen a steady decline in people ordering formal business suiting, but still want to be wearing tailoring. And I think that's where it's our job as cutters and salespeople to guide people through that kind of can be quite trepidatious, actually.
How would you do that? What kind of questions would you ask?
So I think we talk about where and how you want to wear the jacket or the suit. So I really love to sell a two-piece suit that can be worn as separates. So a really easy way of doing that is to have, say, a classic navy two-piece suit, but in like a high twist wool that's great for traveling. You can kind of throw it around and make sure the detailing is, you know, with a button, you have a brown button as opposed to a kind of suiting button. Mm. And so that you can then wear that with a chino or a jean and then a more casual shirt or what have you.
What is a suiting button?
Well, like traditionally, you would kind of match the dark color to the darkness of the suit or whatever it is. And that very much describes it to me visually as a suit, as a two-piece suit. And you can kind of tell when someone, we all know it. We've seen the guy who owns a suit and he wears that suit jacket with his jeans and it really looks bad, you know?
Right.
So it's trying to like figure out those signifiers and change them up a bit and making sure that when someone puts their jacket on from a suit, that it looks like it's been made to be worn as a blazer or as a sports coat.
Aside from high twist, what's another fabric that works well as a suit that can be worn as separates?
So I guess it's really about the tone for me. So, you know, you wouldn't want to wear a chalk stripe suit jacket with a pair of pants, it's going to look terrible. So if it's like a muted check, actually much like the jacket you're wearing, Derek, like something like that could easily work as a two-piece suit, but actively works as a jacket in itself. And I guess as well, like making sure that the styling of the jacket itself is not too formal. So funnily enough, someone asked me today if they could wear a double-breasted jacket from a suit as a separate jacket. And well, you can, as long as it's a bit more subtle. So a deep, lovely navy flannel double-breasted jacket is going to look really great with a pair of slacks. But if you had that in a loud plaid, then it's not going to work quite the same. So it's making sure. And for me, the big thing about any kind of tailoring is to make it really versatile. That's different if you've got a huge wardrobe and you can go, right, okay, today I'm going to have this super oversized check. Then that's a personal preference. But if you don't have the other bits to back it up in the wardrobe, then, you know, it's going to make that one piece quite limited as to how often you can wear it.
We talked earlier about what a guy wants out of a suit and what he needs out of a suit. And that this is a distinction that you have with clients when they come in. What does that mean? What you want out of a suit and what you need out of a suit?
So sometimes, I think sometimes people come in with a very strict vision of what they think they want. But when they're describing how they're going to wear those garments, it doesn't fit at all. So someone comes in and they're like, I travel a lot. I don't wear formal clothing that much. I need to go out to kind of smart dinners, but not this, that, and the other. And then they say they want, you know, a heavy flannel double-breasted suit. Well, that's never going to fit that. That cannot fit the description that he's given me of how he's going to wear that. So that's for me to pick out the bits of the idea that he has of what he wants and where he's going to wear it and where those fit together. And then to kind of narrow down that choice of cloth, because as well, you know, it's really intimidating coming in and asking me, well, what cloth do you suggest when there's like 20,000 options at your fingertips, right. You know?
Like, a lot of guys that I speak to like the idea of tailoring, but they don't work in an office that requires tailoring. They don't wear business suits that often. So to throw that kind of intimidating question at you, what kind of fabrics and what kind of ways or styling can they wear tailoring that works for them?
So do you know what? It's really interesting because I have this description of what I don't like in a suit for myself, which I think also answers the same question. And it's such a silly descriptor. Like, I would say I don't like suity suits. I'm a tailor. What kind of description is that? But I don't like a flat worsted suit because I personally don't feel like I can style them very well. And I feel like too formal and blah, blah, blah. I mean, your listeners might not know what I look like, but I don't look like an average Savile Row tailor. And I wear things in a very different way. And I want things that have got texture and tone. That I think for me, it's those things. So finding a cloth that has the right hand feel for the customer, because some people don't like a high twist, dry suiting. They want something a bit softer. But it's also getting some kind of mottled colors that you can then use that with the rest of the garments that you like wearing. So a roll neck or a sweater or whatever.
So are these signifiers that will help people decide if they are choosing suiting, whether or not to go for more casual fabric? Because the fabrics that you're mentioning, modeling, something with a pattern, those are generally more casual. So if they don't wear suits often in an office setting or in front of a dignitary, and they want to wear a suit, but they want it to reflect their more casual lifestyle, are these fabrics that you would recommend?
Yeah, I guess there's that, but I wouldn't necessarily, the kind of cloths that I'm thinking of aren't necessarily in my head casual cloths. They just have the ability to be flexible. And I think that's the real, so having a flat, clean, finished, worsted navy suit next to a navy that's got a couple of different tones in it, and that could still be a similar weave, but you are able to kind of pick up different notes in the cloth. That's much more flexible for me. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's casual. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you mean to say that you can wear it in different situations? It's not strictly an office suit.
Yeah,
you can
wear
it in an office, or you can wear it out with friends.
Yeah, for sure. And then that goes with the styling. And like more and more, we're seeing people wearing shirt and ties much less, but having a roll neck or a t-shirt. I often wear like band t-shirts in my suits. And so I make sure that the cloth that I've got has got a lot of texture in it so that it can take that kind of the incongruity to wear it, so you can kind of mix this stuff up. And I think for me that anyone who's investing time and money in tailoring, because it's both of those things, that you want to be able to wear it in a variety of different ways. And the other thing I would say to guys who are a little unsure of how to go the tailoring route now that they're not in a kind of suit and tie work situation, is to look at what's in your wardrobe that you wear the most. What colors do you wear the most? Because you can come in and ask for the wish list of this perfect blue suit, but if you never wear blue, what's the point? So, you know, for me, it's about finding the pieces that fit really well into your existing wardrobe, but elevate them to a point that you can wear tailoring in a formal or non-formal situation, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I thought we had a really good conversation earlier about how people come in and out of confidence in terms of
what they are
willing to wear and how they feel in their clothes. Can you elaborate on this idea?
Yeah. So I kind of hit on this kind of quite recently because I've been developing my own personal wardrobe a little bit in a way that I hadn't done for ages. And I think that, I guess people always assume like a linear uptick of your confidence in clothing over your decades. And I just don't think that's true. I think life and your changing looks and your work situation and all sorts of different things kind of come in to affect your self-confidence. And I think that's really reflected in your wardrobe. And so I was explaining earlier that when I was in my kind of early 20s, when I really didn't care very much what people thought of me, it was really loud, bright colour clothing, very 60s, finding stuff in vintage stores and Winkle Pickers and all of that stuff that you get when you're really young. And then I kind of got my proper job in Savile Row and I kind of started getting a bit nervous about how I looked. And so when I first started, there was kind of a bit of that, and then it slowly disappeared. And I just wore predominantly black for like a decade. And I thought it was my personality for sure. I was like, no, I'm the person who wears black. And then recently I've become much more interested again in my own style, as opposed to other people's clothes, that I've been enjoying wearing different colors and bringing back, you know, autumnal tones and making my wardrobe just a bit more interesting and very 70s, I guess, is the point for me personally.
That's a decade that you draw a lot of inspiration from,
yeah,
the 70s?
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
What is it about the 70s that you like?
I don't know, it's just so sexy. Like, it's so sexy in rock and roll, right? And I love the music. Like, I'm really mad into music. So for me, I think the epitome of rock and roll tailoring is slap bang in the middle of the 70s, really.
What are some things from that decade that you really like?
Oh, God, it's going to be really embarrassing stuff. So I guess actually it's late 60s to late 70s.
That's,
I guess,
okay. You're in a safe place.
He doesn't even wear tailoring, but Jim Morrison is like the epitome of rock god, right, for me. But also the discovery of all of the footage from Get Back. So what's that, 68, 69? Yeah. Beatles and them all looking very different.
That's true. By that time, they stopped wearing their uniform of all having the same outfit and they started to experiment more with their different personalities. And was that one of the inspirations of the brown velvet jacket?
Yeah, for sure. So Paul McCartney came out as like a real standout everyday tailoring guy in that footage. I think we can exclude Ringo, however great he looks like in a PVC Mac, you know, it's not quite what we're looking at. But yeah, for sure, it's like those kind of battered up suits that you feel like you've had forever, but are still kind of luxe and, you know, that you can throw on after a night out and still look good in it.
Is that, would you say, one of the markers of the rock and roll look is something that is cut very precisely for them, but well worn?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's what we were talking about, Peter, earlier, is that having it fit perfectly, but you can just pick it up and throw it on. And this is the idea that I've come back to recently. I had this leather jacket that I had in the mid-90s that I absolutely adored. And it was like this battered brown leather with a pin tuck in the waist. And I miss that jacket so much. Like, I just, A, I outgrew it, and B, it fell apart. I think I'd safety pin the pins, the sleeves on at some point, but it's that garment. I would love people to have a whole wardrobe of those kind of garments that you pick up and go, oh, I love this so much, and you put it back on.
Is part of that connected to personal nostalgia?
Yeah, I don't think I can ignore that for sure, but I think all of us are nostalgic for a certain look.
Yeah,
I
absolutely. Do you know agree. What I mean? No, the reason why I ask that is because for me, a lot of the clothes that I'm currently into are stuff that I remember as a child and the feelings that those clothes gave me, either seeing them on somebody else or seeing them on myself, looking at old pictures, thinking, I miss that feeling and I want to feel that again.
Is that the Shirling coat?
The Shirling coat is definitely a part of that. Lots of brown, as you can probably
guess. From your early days of wearing Shirling coats?
Yeah.
From your childhood days of...
When you were selling cars.
I have to say, it probably wasn't real Shirling. It was probably a little...
Want
to
hear the rest? Listen to the full episode and many more other exclusive episodes over on our Patreon. Visit patreon.com/Blammo to sign up and join the Blam fam. You also get access to our exclusive members-only Slack group where we chat about this and a ton of other things. So head over to patreon.com/Blammo and we'll see you there.